Chapter 4. Ulinor, Low Orbit. The lighting in the chamber had been switched off, leaving it illuminated only by tall candles arranged in a circle. Banners hung in the shadows, and before each was set a small altar on which company relics had been carefully laid. War gear from past heroes, trophies from slain foes, artifacts connected to the Emperor, Dawn, and Sigismund.
"Upon us has been thrust a duty no other is willing to take."
Beaumont stood in the circle of light in front of his kneeling marshals. His blade was bared, its edge resting on the skin of his exposed left palm. The light of the candles was swallowed by the black weave of his robe, his skin dark.
"We few, we that hold to the higher ideals of the Emperor from the wisdom of Sigismund, know a truth far more valuable than any weapon."
His seven subordinates looked up at him with expressions fierce with pride, eyes alight with zealous fury.
"Long has been the path to this understanding. Long have we warred in the darkness, driven by ancient oath, but unknowing of the truth to which we were being drawn. As the light of the Emperor guides ships in the warp, we must allow the truth to guide our actions. Only from the divine will of the Master of Mankind comes our purpose. No loyalty, no oath, no duty is above that fealty."
He slowly drew the blade across his hand, allowing thick blood to spill onto the parchment that lay on the deck at his feet, weighted with gilded skulls of assorted alien species, an orc among them. The blood spattered across the yellowing sheet and soaked into the porous material. Moving his hand, Beaumont allowed the drop to form a rough cross, the shape of the Black Templar's chapter badge.
"From this blood we shall know the truth, for the Emperor's will courses through our veins. Our hearts beat by his design. Lord Dawn, our Creator's eternally blessed son, gave unto Sigismund his gene seed, and from Sigismund the great and loyal crusade we were given form and will."
Beaumont flicked his blade clean, the last of the blood creating fresh marks on the parchment. He sheathed the sword and crouched, examining the patterns in some detail. The High Marshal allowed the truth to take him, his stare losing focus, his vision fogging, as the spirit of the Emperor seeped into his soul, touching him with its wisdom. The markings swam in his vision, merging and splitting, forming shapes as yet beyond discerning. Beaumont closed his eyes, allowing the memory of the blood omens to continue to form in his thoughts, seeking the intervention of his divine master. It came to him in a flash. The patterns became an image, the image a vision. A sword descending, piercing a world. Its meaning was clear.
"Praise the Emperor, for he has made his will known to us,"
declared Beaumont, opening his eyes.
"Mark these words for remembrance, brothers,"
he whispered, looking at each of his subordinates, pleased by the resolve.
"Trust in the Emperor at the hour of battle. Trust to him to intercede and protect his warriors true as they deal death on alien soil. Turn their seas to red with the blood of the slain, crush their hopes, their dreams, and turn their songs into cries of lamentation."
At a gesture from their High Marshal, the Black Templars rose. Beaumont stooped and picked up the parchment. He tore it into strips, passing the tatters to his subordinates. Clermont fell out of line to follow his commander, bringing with him one of the large red candles that illuminated the chamber. Using the molten wax, he helped his battle brothers to affix the bloodied parchment to their armored pauldrons, placing each piece amongst the remains of previous purity seals.
"Praise the Emperor! In our blood flows his will,"
each marshal intoned as he received the anointment from Clermont.
"As our blood flows, his will is done. Return to your ships and prepare for the combat drop," Beaumont announced. "We have enough data from the initial scans to target the enemy. Let others wring their hands like timid scholars pondering their mysteries. We are the light that leads the way. The crusade continues, brothers. We are the Black Templars, the Emperor's Sword, and in our wake shall come the Imperial Truth.
We attack, High Marshal? Asked Clermont. The Castellan was excited by the prospect, not daunted. His hands trembled with anticipation, spilling drops of wax from the candle. Beaumont smiled.
Indeed. Let us pray, as our bolters shall praise the Emperor soon enough.
He bowed his head, one hand on the pommel of his sword, for no true warrior could commune with the Emperor without a weapon in hand.
Lead us from death to victory, from falsehood to truth. Lead us from despair to hope, from faith to slaughter. Lead us to his strength and an eternity of war. Let his wrath fill our hearts. Death, war, and blood. In vengeance serve the Emperor and the name of Dawn.
The initial readings had been fruitful, but not conclusive. Skimming through the upper atmosphere, the datacraft pieced together a rudimentary topology and energy schematic of Ullinor. The world was made up of three large continents and two oceans, one broken by a vast archipelago. These bodies of water were shallow, scarcely seas at all, and what further water remained to the planet was mostly trapped at the icy poles. The land was covered with urban sprawl, almost four-fifths of Ullinor inhabited, the density rising to an estimated several hundred thousand per square kilometre in the areas defined by the orbital surveys. It was to these huge conurbations that the datacraft headed, dividing into squadrons as they descended several kilometres through the thick clouds of vapour and pollutants.
"Why have the orcs not attacked?" asked Delthrak. "We know that they possess detection systems capable of reaching beyond orbit."
"Insufficient data,"
chimed three of the Dominus's servitors before he could reply.
"Our craft are unarmed. Perhaps they do not perceive them as a threat,"
Zokuf said.
"Orcs care nothing for such niceties," countered Laurentis.
A cable snaked from the nape of his neck to a nearby console, allowing him to monitor the data flow in real time.
"They relish conflict, but they are also genetically programmed to dominate and destroy. However, there may be another truth hidden in your words, Dominus. The lack of armament may mean the orcs simply do not recognize the datacraft. It would be inconceivable to their minds that an aerocraft would not possess weapons. They might simply mistake them for orbital debris."
As he considered this, Zokuf slid a partial consciousness engram through a data transmitter, allowing him to settle part of his awareness into the implants of one of the pilot's brains. For this close inspection, he chose the lead craft of the squadron nearing the largest energy returns. Only the complete rejection of the flesh allowed him such transference. Bitter experience had taught some of his body-bound predecessors that biological distraction acted as an anchor to the consciousness and caused duality matrix problems with full engramic integration. Zokuf reminded himself that he had transitioned to total technopic encasement to allow him to better monitor the battle data for his command, but the perk of being able to partially experience frontline conflict in this manner also brought a certain level of satisfaction and reward. The pilot blinked as the Dominus's presence settled into his stem implants. Zokuf adjusted his perception systems, dialing them back to the mortal visual spectrum, and looked out of the pilot's eyes. Witnessing an event firsthand was as important as any data feed analysis. The squadron broke through the cloud layer just a short time later, revealing the sprawl of the orc cities and the wastelands between. Grey dunes spread across steep hills and dells, shifting in a strong crosswind. Large patches of oxide red and verdigris-like debris marked the expanse. Processing this, Zokuf determined that the coloration was due to staining from the decay of ancient metals, possibly structures, potentially immense machines. This ashen wilderness was littered with fortresses and other defensive structures. Walled compounds, several kilometres across, loomed over fading lines of age-old highways, while spurs of stone parapet and turrets splayed like the limbs of squatting arachnids, tipped with ungainly towers of corroded metal. Sluggish rivers of polluted water meandered through the detritus citadels. Spectromatic feedback revealed a toxic combination of chemicals oozing from the city, acidic and deadly, at least to humans. Though we understood the hardiness of the orcoid species, the Dominus were surprised to see small towns clinging to the banks of the rivers, breaching the lakes and pools as stilt villages, as though some sustenance might be clawed back from the oil-slicked flows. The outer settlements and maze of roads grew thicker, closer to the city, like the moons of a gas supergiant unable to escape its pull, not yet consumed by its presence. There was no single point of change, no easy delineation between not city and city. The citadels started to merge, becoming vaster and taller, yet still only outskirts and buttresses of the urban mountain that rose up beyond. While he rode on the physical senses of the datacraft pilot, the Dominus allowed his central consciousness capacitators to analyze the ongoing stream of other data fed into dozens of the Cortex Vedana's supercogitators. He traced a near-invisible energy stream networking through the scattered settlements to the central mass of the city itself. There was certainly no sign of a physical transmission system on the surface, and the surveyors were unable to determine if subterranean lines carried the energy waves. Nor did there seem to be any specific generation point. A few reactors and power plants had been detected in some of the fortresses, but their grids did not extend far beyond their walls. More confusingly, the energy flow appeared to be towards the city, not out of it. The settlements were feeding the city somehow. With a growing sense of distasteful revelation, Zhokov was forced to conclude that the city was built from the remains of a far larger settlement, like a star-going nova that was consuming its stellar system to fuel itself. Its near-impossible bulk heaved out of the plain, separated from a high mountain range to the west by a broad river that meandered northwest to a ragged coastline 15 kilometers from the base of the mountain. Tectosonographic impulses revealed that the heart of the city delved as deep into the crust as it rose, a catacomb of thousands of square kilometers of halls and corridors, the equal of the buildings and streets above. Unlike the shanty keeps of the ash wastes, these buildings seemed new. Although the materials were obviously reclaimed, showing signs of corrosion and improvisation, the slab-sided structures had a more considered, fabricated look than the ad hoc fortifications of the wasteland. The closer to the centre of the city, the more organised the layout. Wide thoroughfares and broad plazas that would be the envy of any imperial city emerged from the discordant urban clutter of the periphery. Even as he marvelled at this, Zhokov registered a vocal input and identified it as coming from Phaeton Laurentis.
"Remarkable," droned the tech priest. "Even a cursory analysis of the structural integrity ratings reveals a complex logarithmic progression."
"I see it," said Delthrak. "It is an exponential inversion. What does that mean?"
"Order from anarchy,"
Laurentis let out one of his grating chuckles.
"An urban incarnation of the emergence of will over wild."
The Dominus briefly focused on the other squadrons to see if they encountered similar circumstances. The other two cities, of which it seemed there were actually many more across the planet, duplicated the structure from disorder scale to varying degrees.
"Manifest order," crowed Laurentis.
His enthusiasm quickly turned to solemnity.
"I warned about this from the outset, but I was wrong. No simple will guides this. No volition. No single vision, to be precise. It is the inherency of the native orcoid hierarchy to eventually escalate to a point where upper echelons of order realize endemically out of the semi-random appropriation of their genetic and technological inheritance.
If allowed to grow to sufficient levels, a true Veridi Gigantica civilization emerges,"
Zhokov mused.
"A sustainable, organized culture? Is that really possible?"
"Possibly even sentience to the point of coexistence,"
Laurentis postulated, his vocal synthesizers tremulous with the thought.
"Impossible," snapped Delthrak.
The barbarian's advocate snorted.
Highly organized, I grant you. Capable of peaceful interaction with other species. Nothing in any study has ever hinted at such a possibility. Structured or not, they would see the cult Mechanicus and humankind destroyed or enslaved. No weapons, added the Dominus. We are well within any security zone, 18 kilometers from the city center. No response, as yet.
Long-range visuals started to reveal the innermost areas of the city, while laser-like injection scans sent back more detailed feedback of geological, physical, and structural data. Where the outer precincts seemed heaped upon each other, almost toppling upon themselves in their efforts to cram in as much living space as possible, the city's inner region was like the eye of a storm. An instant later, Zokuv's surveyor senses felt a surge of power from below, emanating from the outer fortifications. His immediate reaction set sirens squealing through the decks of the Cortex Verdana and triggered alarms across the panels of the other datacraft. The pilot he was monitoring responded within moments, as did the others, but human reactions were simply not swift enough to avoid what happened next. Energy flared up from the ground, flowing like a shimmering wall from hundreds of generator stations located in the outlying citadels. 4 milliseconds after first detecting the eruption, Zokuv wrenched his engrammatic presence out of the pilot's body, but even so, he felt the contact shock of the force field's interaction with the datacraft. Through his assayer conduits on the Cortex Verdana, the Dominus witnessed an interspersed energy signature unlike anything he had encountered. Part gravitic, part electromagnetic, part radiation, and part something entirely unquantifiable. The same happened in the other targeted cities with near instantaneous coordination between the different conurbations. Part of him experienced the raising of the defensive shield in this detached manner, watching the intersection of the roiling wave with the physical entities of the datacraft, slicing them in half. Simultaneously, his meta-being, still encapsulated in the biological systems of a pilot, caught the faintest echo of the man's interpretation of events. It was as though a giant hand swatted him out of the sky. An impression, nothing physical to be recorded, nothing verifiable. Swatted. It was the exact feeling that vibrated through Zokuv's being as the tiniest portion of mortal pain started to flood the pilot's nervous system, and the Dominus's engrammatic ejection completed. The datacraft and its companions exploded as power plants overloaded, turning each into a scattering of particles that slicked along the shimmering screens of energy that now enveloped the cities. Wholly back aboard his starship, Zokuv took nearly 2 seconds to recover from the shock of engrammatic death. He felt incomplete, disjointed. Flustered, he withdrew his other data tendrils from the Cortex Verdana's systems, allowing full control back to the servitors and tech priests. He detached his auditory and visual inputs to cocoon himself in absolute sense deprivation for several milliseconds while he contemplated the experience. Mortality. There had been no physical threat to the Dominus, but even the glancing experience of the Orc's power left him in no doubt that he faced a highly advanced technology. It was one matter to know as much from the reports of the attack moons and other weaponry thus far employed, but it was something far different to encounter it firsthand. Shock gave way to remembrance of his duty to the cult Mechanicus. Fear subsided, to be replaced with resolution and ambition. The power arrayed against them was indeed formidable, but he would overcome the obstacles. Zokuv would harness that power and tame the Xenos technology for the sake of Mars.